Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 24th of May. Our guest this hour, Professor George Waller, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. And we have all things political this hour of the program. We're going to begin with the environmental disaster caused by the Deepwater Horizon explosion and the subsequent oil gushing. And nobody seems to have an answer as to how to stop this oil from gushing. And everybody who lives in that area, to say nothing of people all over the world probably, are very upset about the fact that nothing's really being done about this, and there doesn't seem to be an answer in sight. Also, we have news in the New York Times this morning that since the president announced a moratorium on permits for drilling new offshore wells and a halt to this waiver that was given to the Deepwater Horizon, at least 7 new drilling permits and 5 waivers have been granted. So what's the story with that? We'll look at Rand Paul's victory, how the Republicans proceed as a result of that victory. And Frank Rich had an interesting, he always has interesting columns, but yesterday he wrote in his column that we get further evidence of race's role in a movement whose growth precisely parallels the ascent of America's first African-American president. The Tea Party apologists are saying that it was merely a gaffe and a liberal media trap when Paul on Wednesday refused to tell Rachel Maddow of MSNBC that he could fully support the Civil Rights Act of 64. But Paul has expressed similar sentiments repeatedly, at least as far back as 2002. We welcome your phone calls all hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And our email address, if you would like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor George Waller, good morning. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, good morning, Kathleen. It's always a pleasure to be with you and your audience.
Yeah, great to have you here. New York Times reporting this morning that we're supposed to have a moratorium on permits for drilling new offshore oil wells, considering the fact that nobody knows how to stop this gushing of oil, and it's an environmental disaster. We've got permits given for drilling new offshore wells and also environmental waivers. Why is this happening?
You know, it's sort of hard to fathom how something like that can occur. My suspicion is that these applications were in the pipeline before the moratorium was actually announced, and that it was a matter of getting those through that pipeline. But it is astounding, and I think it points out to people a lot of the sort of discontent they have with an ability to actually solve some of these monumental problems. And this oil spill in the Gulf is clearly evidence of that.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, people in Louisiana, the governor is saying that the White House is ceding too much power to BP on this issue. He wants to be able to build some new barrier islands, but he needs some kind of permit from some organization in Washington, and he can't get it. It seems logical to me to want to build that. Why can't he get permits?
Absolutely.
Who's in charge?
You know, it's just, I think that those permits have to come from the Army Corps of Engineers. And, you know, they obviously before they issue those permits, they have to do their own internal studies to see whether or not they're going to be effective. But I think it's clear that what's indicated here is the inability for government agencies to respond in a timely fashion to these kinds of crises.
Mm-hmm.
It's just further evidence of the fact that we try to do things in a kind of reactive fashion rather than being proactive at the beginning in order to make sure that these kinds of things do not occur.
Right. Well, I don't know why we can't come up with some, and I don't know exactly what needs to be done, but nobody else seems to either. But each passing day, and it's been days and days and days now, we're seeing the birds dying, and those barrier reefs are going to be destroyed, and the oil's on the shore. It's hard to watch this without thinking that there's an end to it, because what is the end to it?
Yeah, and we don't know. We just don't know how long that thing can continue to spew that oil and gas into the Gulf. And, you know, what we've seen in the past 35, 36 days is a clear indication that BP had no real plan for dealing with this kind of catastrophic incident. And it also indicates that government isn't prepared in the absence of BP's or any corporation's ability to deal with these things to meet the challenge that this can pose. just a sad sort of story.
So there have been calls for BP to stop any kind of work, and the government, the federal government, should take over. I don't know what the federal government could do, but do they politically need to take over this cleanup, or this could be a political liability for them?
Yeah, I think it's a political liability on all sides here. But clearly, I think what we're going to see is increasing pressure on BP. I think it's long time that that BP has indicated that they can't really deal with this. So I think we're likely to see a government takeover. The problem is, of course, you're in this environment where there is this anti-government spending and anti-deficits, and it's going to be a monumental expense on the part of government agencies to take this over, while at the same time you have a cap on the liability for BP and oil companies in terms of what they are liable for in the event that this kind of thing occurs. So you've got this interesting sort of dynamic where you've got, on the one side, people are saying, you know, big government and government takeovers and government spending needs to be constrained. And on the other side, you've got people saying we need to really sock it to BP and increase those liability limits. And this becomes a political football. And I think what's obvious here is the public is increasingly saying, a pox on both your houses. This is a problem that needs to be solved, and it requires a solution, and nobody seems to know how to deal with coming up with a solution.
Yes. Well, that's the problem here. Does anybody have a solution? It's just astounding to me that BP is trying one thing, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
They're trying another thing, it works a little bit. Does anybody, and now we've got people coming forward and saying, well, I developed this in my backyard and this seems to work. And does anybody know how to clean this up?
You know, I don't think anybody does. And this is one of the problems. I mean, how could permits be issued to oil companies to drill in the Gulf when supposedly they have to come up with a plan that indicates what they would do in the event of an environmental catastrophe? And it's clear that whatever BP had come up with by way of a plan to deal with the event of a catastrophic emergency like this was absolutely inadequate, and yet it got approval.
Right.
And it went forward. I think it's this idea that, you know, we're so dependent on these fossil fuel energy sources that we sort of give lip service to the idea of environmental protection, and we kind of just simply say, well, it looks as though there's a plan here, when clearly, as has been evidenced here, there is no comprehensive plan to deal with this kind of a catastrophe.
Well, I've lived through enough energy crises and long lines at the gas station in Jimmy Carter's days, and even Richard Nixon when he told us to turn off the Christmas tree lights, to wonder what it takes in order for us to come forward with a long-range plan.
Yeah.
Because here we are, 2010, and we're making a little bit of progress on green energy, but we haven't made enough. This could have been, it seems to me, maybe I'm naive, avoided if we had thought long and hard about where we wanted to be in 2010.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I think part of the problem is the expectation of the American public not to have to give things up. We've been going for so long with this notion that we're comfortable with our lifestyle, we like the consumption of energy, and we're refusing to face the realities of what it means. And I mean, maybe, you know, we say this again and again and again, it takes a catastrophe to get people to start to really think about what we need to do to change our course and come up with a comprehensive long-range energy policy.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of response do you think the president is going to get today with this reporting that there are new drill wells permits being given, and also that environmental waivers have been granted? I mean, he's going to be on the spot for this, isn't
absolutely.
He?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this has been a dicey political situation for Barack Obama as well. You know, just a few days prior to this catastrophe, he had announced that he was going to include in his energy package more opportunities for oil companies to drill in the Gulf. And then this came. Obviously, that required him to rethink his energy policy. He announced a moratorium, and now we find out, as was reported, as you mentioned, that there have been 7 new permits granted and 5 environmental waivers granted, and people are incredulous. How could this possibly happen in the wake of this catastrophe? The president has some hard questions to answer.
Yes, he does. We're going to welcome phone calls. I'm sure many of them today will be on this topic. Our number is 800-486-8655. Rand Paul has been receiving a lot of media attention. Tell me if you think it's too much. But I was struck by Frank Rich's column yesterday in which he talked about the evidence of race's role in a movement. And he's talking about the Tea Party movement, whose growth precisely parallels the ascent of America's first African-American president. And then he referenced Paul's comments that he would fully support the Civil Rights Act of 1964 now, but he thought that private businesses shouldn't be told what to do. Are we making too much of this? What are the ramifications for Republicans and the Democrats with his victory? And would you agree that these race issues that we associate with the Tea Party parallel the election of America's first African-American president?
Well, it's very interesting. Rand Paul's own words are what got him into this situation. I mean, when he appeared on the Rachel Maddow show the other night and refused to support in full the Civil Rights Act by essentially saying that he was in support of it except for when private businesses might want to discriminate. He's also gone further in saying, with respect to the Fair Housing Act, that he doesn't see it at all problematic for an individual to refuse to sell their home to someone of a different skin color. So Rand Paul's own words have sort of created this situation. And it's interesting whether or not race is playing a role here. It is an indication how race is clearly yet an issue in America that we have failed to confront head on. There are obviously people in this country who still do harbor racist attitudes. We've seen it in respect to the immigration law in California, in Arizona. We see it now in some of these candidates coming forward and expressing reservations about the extent of the application of the Civil Rights Act or the Fair Housing Act. So I just think race has always been one of those sort of undertone issues in American politics, and it may well be as a result of Barack Obama's election that it has become something that we see more and more rise to the fore.
Let's go to phone calls. Matt is our first caller. Hi, Matt.
Morning.
Hi.
With regards to the oil spill, I think that the federal government did have a plan for dealing with just this type of situation that was enacted under the Clinton administration. And that solution said that as long as the prevailing winds were not blowing towards the shore, the solution would be to immediately set any type of slick like this on fire to prevent it from leaving the immediate area of the spill. And I think most people would agree now that that should have been followed, but it was completely ignored and not talked about. And another possible solution to this is if we look towards Russia. They've had several of the same type of spill in offshore drilling sites around their country, and the solution was a low-yield nuclear device for any type of spill that could not be contained within a few days, and they have actually done this three or four times, and it has worked 100%. And I don't hear anybody talking about this.
Professor Waller.
Yeah, I there are all kinds of potential solutions out there. One of the problems with burning the oil, for a while there, they attempted to sort of round that up and do and burn some of that off the surface, but they had problems doing it because of the winds and the choppiness of the seas. They also have a problem in that a lot of the oil that is leaking from this well isn't rising to the surface. There's a lot of it that's trapped underwater, and you can't really burn it underwater in that regard. Now, as far as the low-level nuclear option to sort of blow up and cap the well, I think there are concerns about what might occur in the event of that. I know there have been success in other places, but it's clearly an option that people have not, at least to this point, seriously considered. It may be something on down the line that we're going to have to consider.
Thanks, Matt. Dick in Waukesha. Hi, Dick.
Yeah, well, back to the lamenting about why we haven't been doing something about this long ago. Wasn't it the much maligned, stupid Jimmy Carter who was warning us about such things to the environment?
Well, it was indeed. I mean, that was the famous sort of malaise speech,
yes,
by Jimmy Carter. Yeah. But I think you're right. But, you know, what Carter was asking for of people was an element of sacrifice, an element of conservation in their own lives. And
yeah,
people simply were not ready to take that message. I believe now that he was sort of prophetic in that regard, that we surely needed to take that approach long ago, but didn't.
A lot of us believed he was prophetic, but not enough of us.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, thanks, Dick.
It's unfortunate that too often it's these kinds of catastrophic disasters that cause us to take pause for a moment and think about where we're going to go. Whether this will be enough to compel people to really, really begin demanding that, we'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Dick, for your call. What about this president? Why doesn't he call for this kind of conservation?
Boy, you know, I think it's been a lot of attempts to try to think politically about how to get energy policy passed. I think he understands with the filibusters that take place in the United States Senate that unless he's able to bring over one or two or a few more Republican senators in support of an energy package, nothing is going to move forward. He can't be as aggressive as some might wish, because he needs to get a couple of those Republican senators on board in order to pass it, which is why I think when he initially put forward his energy package, he conceded to many on the other side of the aisle that we needed to include some expansion of drilling for oil in the Gulf. I mean, remember, one of the mantras of the Republicans and the Tea Party movement was drill, baby, drill.
Right.
And I think this is something that he did thinking politically about the need to call to get on board some of that Republican support that has caused this to occur. Where we go from here will be interesting to see how it plays out politically in terms of what we should do, not only about this catastrophe, but what we do about enacting some kind of comprehensive energy policy for the future.
Right. Well, he certainly has all the visuals, those sights of the birds covered
Indeed.
In oil. You could see him addressing the nation, couldn't you, in saying we have witnessed this horrendous environmental destruction, and it is not acceptable. We don't really have answers for it, and I am calling for a complete moratorium on any kind of drilling, and we must have mandatory conservation, and here's what I want you to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's something I think he's going to have to step up to the plate and do. You know, the other thing is, I mean, there's so many elements to this. The idea that there is a limit on the liability for those companies that drill in the Gulf that results in the possibility that BP will end up using the legal process to limit its liability, which means that, in effect, we're going to have to take over this cost. All of us as taxpayers are going to have to take over the cost of continuing that cleanup, which will probably last for decades in that region. Not to mention the economic catastrophe that's occurring for all those fishermen in the Gulf. Now there's news that some of this may travel up the Florida coast. It's going to potentially affect the Florida Keys. I mean, this is a monumental ecological disaster.
Yes.
And the idea that oil companies can be limited, the liability can be capped, is problematic.
Yeah. Our guest this hour for All Things Political, Professor George Waller, assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. He's a professor of political science. Our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program, we'll be examining the state of cable news. We return to phone calls now for Professor Waller, and let us go to Beth from Mosinee. Hi, Beth.
Hi. My question is, can you tell me about any volunteer opportunities for me and my teenage daughter to go down sometime when school is out to help with the cleanup? And we don't have any kind of special training or anything, and I'm going to hang up and write down what you say.
Okay. I don't know of those opportunities. Do you, Professor Waller?
I don't know of any yet, but I'm imagining that at some point, particularly if the government has to take over this cleanup, that there probably will be some opportunities for people to come down and scoop oil off of sand off the beaches, maybe to even help out in collecting some of the birds and some of the wildlife
yes.
that may be affected. But you're just going to have to stand by and wait for that. So far, much of the effort has been on the back of BP to prevent the spill from coming ashore. That clearly hasn't worked. Now that it has, I think we're going to increasingly see in the next week or so efforts on the part of the state of Louisiana and the federal government to begin the cleanup as it comes on shore. So stay tuned. I'm sure those opportunities will become available.
Thank you, Beth. Benjamin in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Benjamin.
Good morning. I have a two-part question. My first question is, despite everything that's been happening local in the Gulf as far as the spill goes, oil prices and gasoline prices around my area in Chippewa Falls have continued to decline somewhere close to 20 cents on the gallon. And then my second question, well, first of all, I'd like to know, I mean, is there any specific reasoning behind that? And then my second question would be is, what are they going to be the long-term effects as far as people like me who really depend on petrochemicals for their job? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank
you. Okay, thanks, Benjamin.
Well, you know, as far as the price of gasoline goes, or the price of oil, you're right, it has fluctuated up and down. There were predictions when this occurred that we'd see the price of gasoline go up to near $4 a gallon. We'll have to wait and see. There's always a lag time between these kinds of events and what's in storage and how it's going to affect prices. But you're right, we have seen a decline in the price of oil, the price of gasoline. I'm not so certain it's going to stay there. I think probably as we get towards midsummer and the height of midsummer, we're going to see those prices rise again. As far as the impact on those who have jobs in the petrochemical industry, you know, it may be that we really need to have an aggressive push towards the development of alternative forms of energy that would include the opportunities for the petrochemical companies to get involved in that research and in that development. You know, it is obvious that in the long term, we have to reduce our dependence on fossil fuel as a major source of our energy. So I think we're in that sort of transitionary period, and I know that for many there are concerns about undergoing that transition too quickly because it would have a detrimental impact on jobs in that industry. But we clearly need to turn the corner and advance our energy policy towards alternative forms of energy, which may include all kinds of other opportunities for jobs.
Habu from Madison, hi.
Yes, good morning, and thank you. Just one piece of information for the person who inquired about getting a job there. There are many who are getting jobs there and getting pretty good salary, but one site she can access is called Deepwater Horizon Response, and they have some contact numbers, etc.
Marvelous.
Two very quick points. We just heard Secretary Clinton in China talk about North Korea, and what was really deafening was that China did not issue a statement. This was after South Korea said that they were going to stop doing trade with North Korea after the apparent sinking by North Korea of their Navy ship. But China has not gone on board with Secretary Hillary Clinton, and that is very telling. I believe that for all that China says about that we hear in this press in the United States, that China talks about North Korea being a trouble, China is very content to have North Korea keep the United States off balance and consumed up with you know, whatever the U.S. does. The second point I want to make is just last week, I think it was a week ago today, Iran together with Turkey and Brazil, and all these are regional powers, agreed to some form of exchange of the lowly enriched uranium that Iran has for in exchange for medical uranium, medically useful uranium, enriched uranium. And the United States has completely dismissed this. And it says that the whole developing world is looking at this and saying, which planet are you living on? You know, the world of the Eurocentric, meaning the Security Council made up of European so-called powers, is really over. So these are my two comments.
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. The North Korea situation is clearly, I think, a troublesome one for the United States. You know, a no statement by China may be seen as probably better than what we have tended to see in the past. But clearly, the incident where North Korea appears to have torpedoed that South Korean naval vessel with a result of some 46 South Korean sailors being killed, is extremely problematic. North Korea has always been one of the troublesome spots in the world for the United States. With China's non-response, I'm not so sure how to take that at this point, because this is a very recent development with Secretary Clinton's statement there in China. We'll have to see how that plays out, but I agree with you, that is a tremendously touchy and difficult issue in world politics. As far as what happened with Iran, you're right. Iran and Brazil and Turkey came up with that agreement, which seemed, at least at the outset, to have diffused some of the concerns that Iran was using their nuclear capabilities for the development of uranium for weapons capacity. And instead, what they're obviously doing is sending that uranium to Turkey and Brazil for processing for medical supplies. So we'll have to see. And you know, it's a very difficult situation. As far as the UN Security Council being composed of a Eurocentric group, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that is the sort of continuing aftermath of the United Nations development following World War II, and the Axis powers, the Allied powers essentially dominating that council. It's another sort of indication that the UN has not caught up to the reality of international politics.
Thanks, Habu, for your call. Let's go to Jim from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I want to give some ideas that progressives can network to get us moving on this energy crisis issue. Today's Milwaukee Journal has page four, front page. BP chose cost-saving option for Gulf oil well. Costlier method tends to be more reliable, experts say. And also a book published in 2006, Lives Per Gallon, The True Cost of Our Oil Addiction by Terry Tominen. That'll be coming to you in the mail for your consideration. And in that book, there are tremendous costs that were incurred through the dismantling of the trolley system in the cities. It talks about Lee Iacocca in 1985 confronting the Reagan administration, Ford and GM, because they sandbagged the miles per gallon requirements. And it has a lot of information about the health costs of our oil-based economy. And it strikes me, finally, that it's interesting to me that they want to limit the liability to BP. Just today I was hearing about a situation of some women down, elderly women down in Racine, wives of veterans that are going to lose their housing, and there's no money available to provide for them. And it certainly suggests to us that every time the public has to incur these costs, it means that there's a lot of money that's lost for other useful projects that we could be doing. And it's also interesting to me that in the first quarter of this year, BP made $8 billion, which averages out to $93 million per day. Now, I don't know about you, Kathleen, or the guests, but if I got $93 million a day coming in, I'd have a hell of a time scraping by. And it's interesting how they want to palm off this cost on us and why people vote for it.
Yeah, that's the problem. People do continue to vote for it. Your comment early on about the idea that BP chose the least costly method to deal with these things, when it was clear that all the evidence shows that the costlier methods are the more productive and the more reliable. And we allow that to continue. You know, we give lip service to the notion that we want a plan for cleanup in the event of a catastrophe, and then when it occurs, everybody's all incredulous. How could this have ever happened? We need to be serious about maintaining environmental controls, environmental regulations before we issue permits. We do these things in a way to kind of get things underway so that nobody has to sacrifice, so that we can produce more and more oil for the lifestyle of the American consumer. And then when catastrophes occur, we point fingers of blame, and nobody is interested in providing solutions. Everybody's interested in thinking about short-term costs rather than thinking about long-term policies, and that's problematic.
Yes, it sure is. Jim, thanks very much. We'll look forward to seeing that book. It would be a perfect time to have this discussion. Everybody wants to talk about the oil situation, which I understand, but I do want to ask you, and feel free, everybody, it's all things political, so branch into other areas, but I understand your concern about this, and I'm sure our guest is happy to take these calls. We were talking about Rand Paul. Did you learn anything from last week's elections in Pennsylvania and Kentucky and Arkansas, or was it just a mix of things?
Both parties are in trouble, and I think it reflects the fact that people are angry about hyper-partisanship. People are angry about the apparent lack of an ability to solve these real problems. And, it's very interesting to see how this is going to play out. I mean, you've got somebody on the one hand like Rand Paul, who clearly is a product of the Tea Party movement, who clearly ran against the Republican establishment and now has created this situation where many in the Republican establishment are worried about some of his particular positions. You have a situation in Pennsylvania where Arlen Specter, who clearly switched parties for his own partisan political purposes, saying, of course, when he did so, that the reason for switching was it was going to get him reelected. That kind of sort of naked self-interest on the part of politicians does not play well with people, and he went soundly down to defeat to Joe Sestak. I think what you see in Arkansas with Blanche Lincoln having to being forced into a runoff is another indication of the degree to which the political environment is very, very unsettled. And I'm not sure how it's going to shake out, but I think it represents a kind of real deep frustration on the part of the American people with the lack of ability for both our political systems and our economic systems to solve problems.
What does the Republican Party, George, do with the Tea Party?
I don't know what they do, and I don't think they know what they do with the Tea Party. And I don't know what Democrats know what to do with the Tea Party. It's just a very interesting kind of development. I mean, it's clear that it's born out of this sense of frustration. It's clear that there are elements of those in the Tea Party who may harbor some very, very sort of reactionary ideas, such as those which were articulated by Rand Paul. But where it's going to all shake up, I don't know, and I don't think the major political parties know either. I think it's going to be one of these things that we're going to wait and see what happens in the fall, and then we're going to start uncovering the results in the fall, and the two major political parties are going to have to deal with it. I think in the long run, what is being reflected here, not just in the Tea Party, but many of those on the progressive side of the Democratic Party also, a discontent with the inability to deal at the forefront with major, major problems. And we're always doing these kind of reactionary things where we're trying to clean up messes as a result of no forethought in the development of policy in the first place.
Yes. Jerry in Madison, hi.
Oh, good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Jerry.
And, to your guest, I think what's key here in the inability or unwillingness of regulatory agencies to is the fact that, more and more of these regulatory agencies are staffed by people from the industry that they are supposed to regulate.
Yeah.
And that's definitely true. What's this, or in the minerals management, what do you call that place? It's there are a lot of people who used to be with the industry. There's a very cozy relationship.
Yeah, indeed. Another part of that's absolutely true. Another part of the problem is that, many of these regulatory agencies have gone through a number of decades now of reduction in their appropriations. They're woefully understaffed. They're not terribly well equipped. And what you have as a result of that is this encouragement by many to have the regulatory agencies essentially rely on the expertise that comes to them from the very industries that they regulate, which has obviously been problematic. But in order to address this, you've got to give those regulatory agencies more authority in the form of more appropriations and more staff in order to investigate and carry these things out. But that's problematic because that obviously requires an investment by taxpayers in a government agency, which politically is simply not palatable.
Right. Something else, Jerry?
No, that's my comment.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call. More phone calls in a moment. It's all things political with a lot of our conversation concentrating on what's happening in the Gulf, the environmental disaster, and how nobody seems to have a plan to clean it up. Our guest is Professor George Waller. He's an assistant professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. And you can move into other areas, too. It's just that so much time has passed, and this continues to be a growing problem, and people are frustrated and mad. More phone calls momentarily, and we'll get to a couple emails here as well. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's get Professor Waller to a couple emails. This one from Chris. I'll put these together. Where are the extraordinary profits these oil companies have been making over the last several years? Can that money be used toward the cleanup? And another from Mark in Genoa. It's not a leak or a spill. It is a rupture. Words matter. And in the case of BP, we need a new term to accurately define what's going on. Leaks and spills are limited, finite. What we have here is a rupture of something massive. I say call it a rupture.
It definitely is a rupture. The problem is we just recently had an effort in the Senate of the United States to increase the liability limits on BP and other companies currently drilling in the Gulf when this kind of a rupture occurs. And it was defeated in the Senate. Now, I mean, if you're talking about the billions of dollars that BP makes, and then at the same time you have public policy which limits the liability for cleanup on these kinds of ruptures and catastrophes, how can you possibly solve the issue unless you have an investment of government resources in cleaning up beyond the liability we place on these oil companies? You know, there's just time after time we see this kind of thing occur. We just had a bill in the House of Representatives which would have authorized $48 billion over 3 years for science and technology programs designed to deal just precisely with these kinds of things. It was defeated in the House of Representatives, again, along party lines with the argument that it would increase federal spending and increase the deficit. I mean, this is the conundrum we're in. On the one hand, you can't do anything because it increases deficits. On the other hand, you're limiting the liability for private businesses for dealing with these kinds of things, and it finds us in a situation where we're essentially, our hands are tied.
Mm-hmm.
Something's got to move.
And what's the rationale behind limiting their liability?
Because it would be detrimental to business. The idea is, you know, you want these, and of course the idea is that if BP goes out of business, it costs lots of jobs, there'll be an impact in a current situation where joblessness and is high. You don't want to have this kind of thing occur, that it would be problematic for many oil companies then to take on the costs associated with being able to obtain those permits for insurance purposes and whatnot if they know that they've got this extreme liability limit. But, I mean, in the long run, we are going to end up paying for it one way or another anyway. So choose your poison, I guess you might say. What are we going to do to move this in a direction toward to actually solving these kinds of problems or actually enacting policies that eliminate the possibility that something as catastrophic as this current rupture could occur?
Hmm. In Zion, Illinois, Sarah, hi.
Hello. Okay, my comments were about BP, but I can't help but wanting to mention that wasn't it George Bush who appointed all these people with business links to all the different environmental regulatory commissions? But then I agree that we have to try to limit our consumption, and I am trying to do that. And I also feel that that BP has been so incompetent and so arrogant and just so outright offensive, and that I think a boycott would really be a good idea. I mean, I know that we have to reduce consumption all across. I mean, we just have to reduce oil, but I mean, BP needs to know that we're really angry at them, and that's all I have to say. Thanks.
All right, Sarah, thank you.
Well, we'll see whether people will do that. I mean, I think there's clearly frustration with BP. Whether that means people aren't going to fill up at BP, I don't know. But As far as appointees to the EPA, I mean the people who are generally the civil servants in the EPA have not been appointed to their positions. They've gotten their positions through civil service exams. The top leadership in EPA is at the prerogative of the incoming president, and the current appointees of the EPA that head the EPA are either career civil servants who have risen through the ranks, or they're appointees of the Obama administration. So this is not something that necessarily can be placed upon the Bush administration for blame. This is something where the Obama administration is in control. The current EPA head, I forget her name, who's been appointed by Obama, clearly needs to be able to move that agency in a direction to aggressively deal with these things. But remember, the EPA is constrained by what the laws of Congress say. They can only act insofar as they have been given authority under the law. That needs to change.
Thank you, Sarah, for your call. Edward, on the road. Hi, Edward.
Hi. My question and comment is that companies like this who are making billions of dollars, who create this kind of havoc, should be legally and morally held to subsidize the people whose livelihoods are being ruined by this.
I have no problem with that, but that kind of a view gets defeated in the Senate of the United States. The current or the piece of legislation which just last week, I believe, came forward, which would have increased the liability limits on BP and other oil companies for this kind of a cleanup, was defeated in the United States Senate along party lines.
And because of that, companies like BP have this sense of security that if they cause any kind of a massive catastrophe like this, then they're not going to be held too accountable.
That's right. And then what happens is the cost of the cleanup falls on the backs of the American taxpayer, which necessitates, if we're going to do it right, that we're going to have an increase in taxes in order to pay for this. We're going to have an increase in the ability of the agencies responsible for doing it in their appropriations and their staffing, and people will raise bloody hell about that because that means you're going to have to increase the deficits.
Right. Is BP, I've heard this along the way, a particularly bad oil company, or are they all cutting corners?
I think BP found themselves in a terrible position as a company that clearly had cut corners in some respects. Not just BP, but, you know, all of the companies. Halliburton was involved in this, and then there was another company that was in charge of actually the wellhead or the device that stops a rupture from occurring, which were clearly faulty. Everybody was trying to skirt corners. Everybody was trying to do things in this regard, in the cheapest way possible in order to maximize their profitability and in order to maximize the amount of oil they could pump out of that well as quickly as possible, all in an effort to satisfy the demands of the American public for cheaper, available, and easily accessible energy.
Thank you, Edward. Rich and Sullivan. Hello, Rich.
Hello, Kathleen. I think a little bit of patriotism is needed here, not this partisanship that we're seeing. The last president we had who was a trained scientist was Jimmy Carter. And when he told the American people, there's a malaise in America, we have to wean ourselves away from dependence on foreign fuel sources, he was described as hectoring.
Mm-hmm.
What we need now is not a presidential commission or a study group. We need a commission of former presidents appearing on screen before the nation and saying, this is it. We're united. Unless we get a handle on where we get our energy from and clean sources of energy, because the entire U.S. fleet of government vehicles could be fueled now by natural gas. It's doable. There's no mystery to it whatsoever. Natural gas is abundant. We need leaders who actually say We're not against each other. We witnessed Jimmy Carter being demonized, and then in came Ronald Reagan saying it's mourning in America. Well, folks, it is mourning in America, only this time there is a U in the word mourning. I know that's really cheesy to do that, you know, like there's no I in teamwork or something like that. But it's M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. That is, we're seeing how we as American people are the selfish and arrogant people who let corporations and our leaders get away with this nonsense.
Professor Waller.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think one of the things we may need to consider as well, because I totally agree with you. What we need, you said patriotism, I call it leadership. Same thing. We need real leadership and real solutions to these problems. And we need to really go beyond the kind of hyper-partisan rhetoric that gets fueled by a lot of talk radio, not this program, but a lot of talk radio, a lot of the cable, and I know this is the subject of your next hour, Kathleen, a lot of the cable political programs that fuel this kind of hyper-partisanship that refuses to allow for a rational, reasonable, patriotic leadership approach to solving these real problems.
Yeah.
I wish we would see the day when that would occur.
I do, too. Here's an email that's come in from Russ in Green Bay. Contrary to what you have said, voters seem to be punishing politicians like Senator Roberts and Governor Crist, who've tried to cooperate with opponents and get things done. The Tea Party types in particular seem to want ideological purity, as demonstrated by the primary victory of Rand Paul.
Well, that's interesting. The Tea Party is a difficult sort of movement to understand, because I think at the same time that there is that kind of hyper-partisanship, there is a sense that I think has become something beyond the Tea Party, among voters of all ideological perspectives, that what we are currently seeing is not addressing the problems that have an impact on people, and we need to have that kind of leadership. You know, President Obama was roundly criticized from both the left and those on the right and by all parties throughout across that spectrum of trying to be perhaps a little naive and trying to get beyond partisanship. And how quickly he suffered politically as a result of what people deemed to be a kind of too willingness to try and be bipartisan. Yet it also seems that that's what we try to hunger for, and yet we tend to vilify those who try to engage in that kind of bipartisan approach. So I don't know. As I say, I don't know what's going to shake out in these elections coming up in the fall. I think what we're going to have to see is what happens, and then we're going to have to assess what does this mean for the ability for us as a people and as a nation to get beyond this and actually begin to think about leadership in moving the country forward to solve these very, very difficult issues.
Thanks, Rich, as always, for your call. Missy. Hi, Missy.
Hi. Thanks for having me on here.
Sure.
I was really interested in what that gentleman caller was talking about before with compressed natural gas for vehicles. I'm the state leader in Minnesota for the Pickens plan, and, of course, we're all for the wind energy and compressed natural gas. Even in the Midwest here, your Schwann's delivery trucks that deliver your food are all compressed natural gas. But the reason I'm calling is because with the BP, with the rig that's in the Gulf right now, materials or minerals management and BP together, minerals management, looked the other way and issued permits for that rig and many others that are out there, like the Atlantis that's out there in the rig or going up right now. And those permits were issued underneath the Bush administration, and everybody seems to be blaming Obama for this. And it wasn't Obama's leadership under which those permits were issued. So I would like to find out exactly, you know, who was, you know, in charge when those permits were issued through minerals management to BP. You know, who allowed them to look the other way and get through and get this built and processed on the cheap.
Well, you're right about BP's permits. They were granted under the Bush administration. But as Kathleen pointed out at the top of the show here, we see currently that there have been 7 new permits issued to oil companies to drill in the Gulf and 5 waivers of environmental permits. Now, that's happened under the Obama administration. I'm not sure, as I said earlier, whether those weren't in the pipeline for a while. But nonetheless, the president certainly has authority and an ability to stop this kind of thing from occurring, and he needs to do that. I think rather than again this finger of blame as to who's responsible for what we need to do is to stop it now, and we need to make sure that in the wake of this we do not issue permits and environmental waivers to oil companies that could have this kind of potentially catastrophic result, unless we're certain that there is a plan in place that will aggressively and appropriately and reliably deal with it. I'm not sure you can come up with one for that kind of an event, which means we really, really do have to focus on an energy policy that looks to alternative sources of energy, be it wind power, solar power, compressed natural gas, all of these alternatives, rather than this continual reliance on fossil fuels.
Professor Waller, thank you so much for your enthusiasm and passion. I reckon you're a pretty good teacher, sir.
Well, thank you, Kathleen.
Thanks.
It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Thanks. Always great to have you with us. We first met Professor Waller when we did our remote in Appleton last summer, was it? It was last summer already. Professor George Waller is an assistant professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, Fox Valley. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We'll return following the news.